I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 18th of March, voting in Wisconsin this hour with David Cannon, professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And there's a lot to examine. The governor told reporters last week that he considers voter identification laws the most pressing election-related issue in Wisconsin. And he'll direct the state legislature to hold a special session to modify a law that has been blocked by the courts. We are still awaiting federal and civil courts' rulings on voter ID in the state of Wisconsin. And the Wisconsin State Senate's Republican leadership yesterday said they favor a special session to address voter ID rather than taking up legislation passed by the Assembly. Last week, the Senate in Wisconsin passed a bill to scrap weekend voting. Republican Senate voted 17-16 for a bill that would bar counties from offering weekend voting or weekday voting after 7 o'clock. Every Democrat opposed the measure. The Republicans said it was needed because in sparsely populated rural counties, weekend voting doesn't justify the costs of keeping polls open, and it would be unfair to let different counties offer different hours. So all of that is on the table this hour, and I think we'll have a lot of response. We've already had many Facebook messages. We'll welcome your thoughts, your concerns about this. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Professor David Cannon's special areas are American political institutions, elections, redistricting, and representation. He's the author of Race, Redistricting, and Representation and the co-author of Election Laws, Mobilization, and Turnout, the Unanticipated Consequences of Election Reform. He teaches courses on American government with focus on Congress, race and politics, the president, and political parties, and he was the recipient of a University of Wisconsin Distinguished Teaching Award. Professor David Cannon, thank you so much for being with us. Hi.
You're welcome. Good to be with you.
Yeah, nice to have you here. I think we're going to have a lot of comment on all of these issues. First, let me ask you, why are we seeing all of this action concerning voting and voting rights and voter ID and when we vote? Why is this all happening now?
Well, I think because there's simply the political opportunity to do it now. With unified control of state government that the Republicans got after the 2010 midterm elections, they moved fairly quickly to impose a new voter ID law in 2011, and now this next wave of changes that are happening in this session, plus redistricting happened last year as well. All of these are moving election law and voting in a direction that's favored by the Republican Party and opposed by the Democratic Party. And these issues always are highly charged in terms of partisan politics, that the Republicans look at voter ID laws and say that they're protecting the integrity of the system. Democrats look at those laws and say that they're basically voter suppression. Same thing with early voting. So you see, it's a huge partisan divide on these issues. And why it's happening now is simply that the Republicans have unified control, so they're able to do this in a way that they haven't been able to either when the Democrats control, part of the state legislature or the governorship.
Mm-hmm. Don't the Republicans run a risk doing it now of people saying this is terribly partisan on your part?
Well, right. I mean, I think that is the danger here, is that there could be a voter backlash against this. In fact, the State Journal ran a story today showing a breakdown, a county map of the state of Wisconsin, showing the use of early voting throughout the state. And they had it broken down by counties that Romney carried and counties that Obama carried. And actually, the single county that had the highest utilization of early voting was Waukesha County, which is probably the most Republican county in the state.
Right.
And there, 28% of the voters in Waukesha County took advantage of early voting. And so this is something that Republican voters use as well. And so if the Republican legislature and governor cut back on early voting, that could be annoying some of their supporters as well.
Mm-hmm. The Glenn Grothman, who's been involved in introducing legislation, had this quote: between early voting, mail absentee, and voting the day of election, anybody who can't vote with all of those options, they've got a real problem. I really don't think that they care much about voting in the first place, right? And other comments from Fitzgerald, it's difficult for people to turn on Channel 6 in Milwaukee, and there's a shot of somebody voting during a time when it's not available to people in rural areas. That seems to be the latest comment that we're getting from many Republicans, that you need a system that is uniform.
Well, this it really doesn't make a lot of sense to me, to that argument, just because we have all kinds of policies that don't apply uniformly to every county in the state. And in fact, it's the Republican Party that historically has been in favor of local control. That, you know, the idea goes back to the, you know, the days of Ronald Reagan, that the government that's best is the government that's closest to the people. And that's been a strong element of Republican Party doctrine going back for decades, is that you want both smaller government, but also government that's closer to the people. And so the idea of local control and variation in how laws are administered to take into account local needs, that's a very Republican idea. And so to go against that now and say, no, we don't want local control, we don't want variation based on the needs of the people in counties that are different, we want uniform state policies that are imposed, you know, on everyone across the state, regardless of need, it seems to me that runs counter to one of the sort of bedrock principles of the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm. Well, plus you just look at the number of people who live in large cities. I live in Milwaukee, and if you go to vote on a major election, you're standing in line for a long time.
Well, right, exactly. And so if you have, you know, 600,000 voters as opposed to, you know, 10,000 voters, there are very different needs. That's exactly my point about the, you know, not a one-size-fits-all doesn't make sense when you have different needs in counties that have hugely different populations. And if you look at Milwaukee or Dane County, you basically have one place you can early vote anyway in the county clerk's office.
Right.
And so that means that there are going to be lines there as well, even if you have the extended hours. But once you cut out the weekend hours and shorten the hours during the weekdays, I mean, it's going to make those lines even worse. And so I think it really is a disservice to the people of the state of Wisconsin.
Professor Cannon, what's the status of the federal and civil courts entertaining rulings on voter ID in the state?
Right. So there are four different court cases.
Oh, there are four.
Four different cases, yeah, that have been applied, two in state court and two in federal court. So the state Supreme Court heard the two state cases just a few weeks ago. They had oral arguments. That decision will be coming down sometime, you know, late spring, early summer. The federal court case was heard late last fall, the two federal court cases, and the ruling could be coming out any time from those cases. It really could be any week now on the federal court cases. But basically, there are three different lines of argument. One is that voter ID laws are unconstitutional under Wisconsin state constitution because it places undue burden on the voters. Similar arguments made in the federal court case. And then you also have an argument in the state court saying that the voter ID law is unconstitutional because it adds additional requirement to voting that's not in the Constitution, and you can't do that. And then finally, in the federal courts, you also have a voting rights challenge under the Voting Rights Act that says that voter ID laws place a disproportionate burden on minority voters, and that's illegal under the National Voting Rights Act.
Now, mention is made of Indiana and a voting rights bill that passed and did pass constitutional muster. Is Indiana's law different than ours?
Yes, it was not quite as restrictive as our law. That's the Crawford decision. It was the one time the Supreme Court ruled on this. And most people think that the Supreme Court's going to have to rule again now on voter ID laws because they've been struck down now in several states, and we have, you know, different interpretations of what's allowed across, you know, different state laws. And so it's quite conceivable that another case in the next year or two will make its way back to the U.S. Supreme Court. But our law is more restrictive than the Indiana law. And also one thing in the Indiana law that the Crawford decision, Supreme Court decision, left open was this question of an undue burden on the voters. They recognized that voter ID laws could place a burden on voters, but the state of Indiana didn't make a compelling enough case to say that was the case in Indiana. Well, in Wisconsin, both in the state cases and the federal cases, the plaintiffs brought substantial evidence that there was a huge burden on the voters. And even in the state case, the Supreme Court justices seemed to be, you know, fairly open to this idea that, you know, this really was a burden. Pat Rogensack, even, you know, one of the more conservative justices on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, said she was troubled by the fact that you have to pay $20 to get a birth certificate in order to get your driver's license. She saw that as, you know, basically a poll tax on the voters of having to pay to be able to vote, and that troubled her. And so this question of a burden on the voters, you know, does seem to be something that in both the Wisconsin Supreme Court case and the federal court case, they really were paying a great deal of attention to that.
Mm-hmm. Governor Walker last week told reporters that he considers voter identification laws the most pressing election-related issue in the state, and he would direct the state legislature to hold a special session to modify a law that has been blocked by the courts, assuming that the $20 for a birth certificate placed an undue burden on people who don't have very much money. Is that what he would be looking at changing for it to pass constitutional muster, or is there more?
Right. There are probably two different things there. One would be for the court to say you can't charge for a birth certificate if the purpose of getting that birth certificate is to get a driver's license to vote. And so that's one angle they could do that might make the law constitutional. The other would be to do something that many other states have done, which is that if you don't have sufficient ID, so you just can't get a photo ID because you can't get your birth certificate, and indeed this happens, you know, all around the country when people try to, you know, get an ID, they're between 6 to 10% of eligible people eligible to vote don't have a birth certificate. And so it is quite burdensome for them to get a driver's license. And so in a lot of states, what they do is they allow them to sign an affidavit saying that they are who they say they are. And with that signature affidavit, that then allows them to vote. We don't have that clause in our law currently. And if they added that, that might also make it pass constitutional muster. But one last thing on Governor Walker's comments about how this is such a pressing issue. I think Dale Schultz said it best in a recent interview, radio interview, and the Cap Times just had a story on that this morning. They posted a story about this, you know, where Dale Schultz says that it simply is not an issue. I'll just read the quote from what he said. Senator Schultz, the only Republican, the senator who voted against the recent election changes, said, quote, "It's all predicated on some belief there's massive fraud or irregularities, something my colleagues have been hot on the trail for 3 years and have failed miserably at demonstrating." And so Schultz says that, you know, that there basically isn't any voter fraud, and that the only thing that the voter ID law would prevent is voter impersonation fraud, and there's simply no evidence that that happens. And this, you know, normally, you know, especially when I'm on Wisconsin Public Radio, I always try to, you know, be like right down the middle in terms of, you know, being very bipartisan on issues and a nonpartisan as much as I can. But this is an issue where clearly, you know, the evidence is so clear that hundreds of thousands of voters potentially are affected by these voter ID laws, and there's no evidence of voter impersonation fraud. It simply doesn't exist. And so there's no public policy rationale for this, and the only possible purpose is to prevent people from voting, and that simply is not a legitimate reason.
We welcome phone calls for Professor David Cannon. Here's how you reach us. We already have a number of Facebook comments, and I think we'll have a lot of phone call comments on this as well. We're looking at a couple issues. Voter ID, the governor has called for a special session in case the law needs to be modified because it doesn't pass muster in state and federal courts. And we're also looking at what happened with the Senate last week in Wisconsin, scrapping weekend voting. So they voted to bar counties from offering weekend voting or weekday voting after 7 o'clock. Every Democrat opposed the measure. So this has become an incredibly partisan issue. What do you think? Here's how you reach us. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're also on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to phone calls and emails for Professor David Cannon. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. Larry is our first caller for you from Sturgeon Bay. Hi, Larry.
Hello. Dr. Cannon, you may not remember me. I took some classes that you did for high school teachers that taught AP government. I did that about 4 or 5 times. But,
excellent.
Great to hear your voice, and you did a great job doing that.
My
question is that is more about redistricting and the impact that has on polarization of American politics. I wonder if you could address that, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, great question. And certainly it's a topic that a lot of people are interested in, is how redistricting affects the level of polarization we have today. And it's a relatively mixed picture, that it definitely contributes, but most of the studies that have looked at this conclude that maybe about a quarter, between 20-25% or so of the polarization we see at the national level is due to the way districts are redrawn. And you know, some of that is, you know, varies because it varies from state to state in terms of which party is in control. And so sometimes if you have split control, you'll have a redistricting that doesn't really sort of help one party or the other, but kind of, you know, helps both parties. And it's only when you have a situation like we had in Wisconsin in this last round of redistricting where one party controls the process that you do get a more partisan kind of a redistricting. So when you look at the sort of net effect across the 50 states, it definitely has some effect on polarization, but maybe not quite as much as some people might think.
Thanks for the call. Phil in Madison, hi.
Hello?
Hi, Phil. Go ahead.
Yes, so Professor Cannon, you just said that there's no evidence of no sign of any voter fraud or voter irregularity in Wisconsin. I just completed a book by a writer, who's with the Wall Street Journal, John Fund, and there's an entire chapter on voter fraud in Wisconsin, and in a part of it that I recall, apparently the Milwaukee Police Department put together a massive report on voter fraud in the city of Milwaukee, which was just not followed up on by the
I've read that report, and the problem is that the type of fraud talked about in that report would not be affected at all by voter ID laws, because the voter ID law does nothing to say anything about felons voting. It does nothing to say anything about illegal aliens voting. It does nothing to say about people, you know, voting, you know, in places that, you know, where they, you know, really haven't been registered, because you can actually register to vote, you know, in a precinct, you know, with an ID. And so, you know, it would, only thing that it would stop, the voter ID law, the only thing that would stop is voter impersonation fraud. And there was not a single case documented in that report or any other report in the state of Wisconsin of voter impersonation fraud. Every suspected case that we've seen in the past has always been an example of clerical error. For example, there was a case here in Madison this last election where a guy went to go vote, got there to the precinct, and he went to vote, and someone already had voted in his name. And so you'd think, oh, a voter impersonation fraud. Someone voted in his name. Well, it turns out there was someone else with his name that lived close by. They gave him the address, went and found the guy. They both came back to the precinct and got it sorted out. And it was just an error by the election poll worker that wrote it down in the wrong place. And so there literally is no evidence. In the state of Texas, they spent several $1 million to try to track down cases of voter impersonation fraud. They found 4 suspected cases. Again, none of them turned out to be and this is out of tens of millions of votes cast. So voter impersonation fraud simply does not exist.
Thanks very much for the call. We have a lot of Facebook comments. I'll read a couple of them to you. This one is from Darlene. In our rural areas, most clerks are paid monthly salaries versus hourly. Plus, we do not have town hall offices, as this is a very part-time job. Ergo, voters will go to the home of the clerk for the absentee paperwork. No extra dollars are paid out for this service. And we have a number of people. Most of the Facebook comments are people who question the motives of those who are supporting reducing accessibility to voting rights. Somebody who's been doing early voting for years now, it's very convenient. What's the problem with early voting? And Monique saying these changes makes her mad and it is not necessary.
Yeah, well, the first one you read with the, you know, reporting about how different it is in the smaller communities where typically, yeah, you'll just go over to the election clerk's house and you'll get the paperwork you need to vote absentee. It's all handled in a very different way than it would be in Madison or Milwaukee, just because it's, you know, a much smaller, more convenient, informal kind of process. And so that goes back to my point about how a one-size-fits-all approach doesn't make sense in the state of Wisconsin. We have very different-sized communities, very different needs of our voters. And so the smaller communities can work out a more informal way to do it of just, yeah, go over to your neighbor's house. It happens to be the election clerk, and you can vote early just by, you know, showing up. Whereas in a larger city, you obviously can't do that. You need to have a more structured kind of system set in place. And so I think allowing each municipality to decide the system works best for them is, again, going to be best for the voters.
Carla from La Crosse. Hi.
Hi. I wanted to ask your guest what he thinks that Governor Walker will propose once the ID, once the courts have come up with their decision.
Well, yeah, it obviously depends on whether or not the courts strike down the law or not. If the courts uphold the law, then it'll be set in place as it was written in 2011. If one of the either the state Supreme Court or the federal court strikes down the law, you know, then my guess is that probably the easiest fix and the one that would be most likely to stand up would be the signature affidavit that I mentioned, that if you go vote and you don't have an ID because you haven't been able to get one for whatever reasons, you'll be able to sign a signature affidavit saying you are who you say you are, and that will take the place of having a photo ID. And a lot of states have done that, and that would be, I think, probably a way around the undue burden kind of argument.
And thanks for the call. Do we have any idea, Professor Cannon, what the impact would be of voter ID and of these changes in weekend voting having more time to vote? Do we know what good estimates would be of how many people would not vote?
Well, it's hard to know for sure. The testimony in the trials on the voter ID law estimated that, again, between 6-8% or so of Wisconsin eligible voters don't have a photo ID right now, and so that would suggest that there are potentially a couple hundred thousand people that could be affected by that. Now, on the other hand, since the law was passed, there have been a couple 217,000 people have actually signed up to get free IDs, and so there are some people who didn't have an ID who signed up to get one, so a little over 200,000. And so, we don't know exactly how many people are left who don't have photo IDs. But clearly, there are some people who would be affected. And it's, in the tens of thousands at least, if not more than that.
Mm-hmm.
On the early voting, there again, it's mostly a convenience to voters that when voters have the opportunity to vote early, it's something that makes it easier for them to vote. And so I think intuitively you would think that it actually should increase voter turnout by quite a bit. The studies of this show that it actually varies by the combination of the laws. And one thing that we found in some research we did on this, that if you combine early voting with same-day registration, so you can actually register to vote when you go to vote early, as we have here in Wisconsin, then it actually does increase turnout. Whereas if you have early voting without that provision and it's simply a convenience to vote, then it actually doesn't increase turnout and can, in fact, decrease turnout in states that just have it alone.
There hasn't been a call for an end to same-day registration, has there?
Well, yes. Yeah, that's something they talked about a couple of years ago in the state legislature as well. But that was killed fairly quickly when Governor Walker indicated he really was not in favor of that. It's such a popular measure here in the state that I think has broad support among the voters that kind of died pretty quickly. But it was raised a couple of years ago, but it I haven't heard anything about it in this session, though.
Joyce is next in Rothschild. Hi.
Oh, hello. I have a couple of comments. I've been a poll observer in a small community in northern Wisconsin, and I have seen how important voting is to people. There were two cases during the last election where two people could not vote. One was a man and one was a woman. And they couldn't prove their residency because one worked for a shelter workshop and his check went directly to the bank. And the other woman had just recently moved into with her sister and she had no proof of residence. Both of them cried.
Hmm.
Also, the bill that's in the assembly right now concerning how close poll observers can stand, this can be a very serious problem for one thing, because if they're 3 feet away from the voter or the poll worker, there's a privacy issue here. And these places where people vote are very small and crowded, and the poll workers are so busy, they shouldn't have to have the additional responsibility of enforcing this law, this new law that would probably be passed.
Thank you, Joyce. What is that law? Has that been passed, Professor Cannon?
Passed the Senate, not yet the Assembly. My understanding is they're going to take up the Assembly is going to take it up on Thursday, is what I understand. But yeah, but Joyce is right that was another important part of these election law changes. The idea of being able to within 3 feet, a poll observer can be now within 3 feet of a poll worker, whereas before the buffer zone was bigger than that. And I think there is some concern among people who monitor elections and pay attention to these issues that there could be some problems with that in terms of either voter intimidation or intimidation of the poll workers in a way that could be counterproductive. And so while I know the intent of the law is to, again, ensure the integrity of the process, the actual effect could be something that even slows down the process of voting more, and having longer lines is something that no voter wants to see.
And her stories about how important voting is to people, the people who cried because they weren't able to vote. Voting is incredibly important in this country. People have died in this country for the right to vote.
Right, right. And that's the thing that, you know, and Governor Walker has said that he wants to make it easier to vote, but just to protect integrity of the process. Well, the problem is often those two things are at odds with one another. If indeed one of the things that is being done to try to protect the integrity of the process is something like a voter ID law, because that, you know, clearly is going to make it harder for a lot of people to vote. And we had, you know, dozens of people testify in federal court and state court to that effect in these ongoing trials. And we know that it would affect, you know, tens of thousands of people in the state that would make it more difficult to vote. So while, you know, both parties, I think, say that they want to make it easier to vote, when you look at the actual effects of some of these laws, it's pretty clear that it's going to make it harder for at least some people to vote.
We're talking about voting this hour of the program, a couple issues that have been voted on by the Wisconsin Senate and Assembly, and the fact that the governor has said we're awaiting decisions by civil court and federal court on voter ID, the governor telling reporters that he would direct the state legislature to hold a special session to modify a law that has been blocked by the courts. He would be looking at what their concerns are and asking the legislature to modify such a law. And we're looking at what happened last week with a bill to scrap weekend voting, and asking what you think about all of this. With Professor David Cannon, our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. David Cannon is professor of political science at UW-Madison, and his special expertise includes elections, redistricting, representation, American political institutions, election laws, mobilization, and turnout. And we have a couple lines open. We haven't all hour, but there they are right now. Laura in Milwaukee is next. Hi, Laura.
Hi. I got a question. What happens to our elders that were born on farms, like up north, like my father? He's 85.
Yep.
They don't have birth certificates. They were delivered by family or midwives.
Hmm.
Right, exactly. In fact, my father also was born on a farm in southern Minnesota, and just in home. In fact, he used to tell the story he was born on the kitchen table. Later, it turns out he was actually born in my grandmother's bed. But this sounds more dramatic
than yeah,
born
does.
On the kitchen table. But no, same thing, that my dad's the birth and all his family members' births are recorded in the family Bible. That's the only record they had of births. And this is exactly the problem that is being brought up now in these court cases. And they had, you know, testimony from people exactly in this kind of situation. One woman was born in Tennessee, moved here as a grandmother to be closer to her grandchildren, and she didn't have a birth certificate. It took her 40 hours and going back to the DMV office multiple times to try to convince them finally to, you know, give her a driver's license, even if she didn't have a birth certificate. And apparently the DMV does have discretion to go ahead and do this, you know, even if you don't have a birth certificate. But that's a very kind of haphazard discretionary process where there's no guarantee that, you know, they would actually give it to you. It's whether or not they believe you, I guess. And again, it took this woman 40 hours and multiple trips. So that, to me, sounds like a pretty heavy burden on the voters.
Thanks, Laura, for your call. Theodore in Madison. Hi.
Hello. Yes. I'm concerned about people, and many people who were born down south don't have birth certificates, and they can never get one because, never, you know, they were of the other thing. I also wanted to comment, I mean, you talked about Waukesha, and how did Governor Walker get an hour off of his work when he was Milwaukee County executive, and then when he was now our governor, you know, he has to vote in Waukesha. The same thing happens to all the people who work these irregular long-time hours, like our fire department people, our law enforcement people, the prison guards. They don't get an hour off to get them back and forth between where they really live. I've tested my pollsters very often because your driver's license picture lasts for 8 years. Can you recognize me? It's, you know, number seven. The only other person that I've seen in print who did conduct voter fraud was a Walker aide who voted out in the west of her state and then came back home and, you know, voted in Madison. And then he had said it was not on the radar even the day before.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that story. What about her other points, Professor Cannon?
Right. Yeah. So quite a few different points raised there, and the you know on the point about you know voting you know twice in you know one in one you could go vote one part of the state and go vote a second time in a different part of the state if you have sort of, you know, local addresses in both, I guess. But again, a voter ID law wouldn't necessarily prevent that if you had you know evidence. Let's say you were registered already in you know one precinct, and then you had a driver's license that showed your address in another precinct, you could technically do that, and it still would end up, you know, not being detected by an ID. And the other point about the people like Governor Walker or a prison guard or someone who, you know, works in a place different than the place they're registered to vote, how that could be a problem for them. Well, that's true, but those, in fact, are then folks who would really be helped the most by early voting, because then any time in the 2 weeks preceding the election, any time you're home, you could actually go vote during the early voting hours and not actually on election day. And so it's exactly those kinds of voters who would be otherwise very inconvenienced by having to, you know, go back to the place they reside, you know, during the workday to be able to vote. So those people, I think, would be really affected by this change in the law if you're reducing the number of hours they can vote early.
Do any states have a law, and have we ever thought of this? I wonder what the policy is for getting a couple hours off work to be able to go and vote. Was that ever the case?
Well, right. No, you have to be allowed to be able to go vote by your employer.
And you that's do?
Something that, yes, they do have to give you your time off to go vote.
Well, more people need to take advantage of that.
Yep. Yeah, that's maybe not as widely known as it should be.
Right. Thanks for the call. Let's go next to Joan in Rudolph. Hi, Joan.
Hi. I'm calling about the lady that called with about the residency where she observed a woman up north who lived with her sister. Mm-hmm. Actually, you used to be able to – I'm a poll worker also, and prior to the last session of the state legislature, the Republican Assembly and Republican Senate signed into law by Governor Walker, changed the rule about somebody that didn't have a proof of residency, just the example of the woman lived with her sister.
Right, the vouching. We can't do the vouching anymore, right?
Come in her name.
Yep.
Well, even though that person is a resident, they used to be able to vote prior to the rule change. Somebody would be able to verify or sign an affidavit stating that I know this person, and I know she is a resident in this district.
Right.
So she was allowed to vote. But Walker signed into law, changed that rule where you no longer can do that. So even though that woman might have had an ID, no bills came in her name, she might not have been employed, she would never be able to vote because of that residency rule.
When did that change, Professor Cannon?
That changed in 2011 as part of that law, the same one that did the voter ID law. And so, yeah, I'm glad that she raised this point, because that is another really important change in that 2011 law, that we used to have this corroborating witness idea that, if you went to the poll and didn't have the actual proof of residence with, say, a lease from your apartment or utility bill or something, or anything that had your name on it with the address, if you had another registered voter with you that would vouch for you, then you still could vote. And the two groups of people most affected by this were elderly people, where often the proof of residence would be in just the husband's name often, and the wife then wouldn't have anything in her name with her name on it, and that now is a problem for voters who don't have an ID. The other case would be students often who live in an apartment. Their name might not be on the lease. Their roommate's name is on it, and so the utility bills come in their name as well. So it used to be the roommate could come vouch for them. Well, now that's not the case either.
Yeah, and it's also true for people. I know every time I go to the polls, there are people who move frequently in the city, and so it's hard to establish a record somewhere.
That's right, yep.
Thank you, Joan, very much for the call. Wade in Richfield, hi.
Hi. I'm calling to say I don't understand this whole why everybody's against the voter ID law, because it's a state law. You're above 18, you got to have ID. You get released from prison, they make sure you have accurate ID. And if people are too lazy to go to the DMV, get an ID, or change their ID because they move, why is that? How is that affecting them? Because they don't keep up. I mean, you're breaking the law. You get in any type of police contact, contact, you got to show ID, whether driver's license or ID. It's a state law.
Well, actually, no. I mean, there are tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people who don't have a law. And if you're not if you're driving a vehicle, yes, you have to have a driver's license. But if you don't drive, and there are many people in the state of Wisconsin who don't have a car, you're not required to have a driver's license if you don't drive. We don't have any other form of state ID that's issued to everyone. You don't get an ID like in most countries. Sort of European counterparts have a national identity card. We don't have a national identity card in the United States. And so you don't actually have any state-issued ID other than a driver's license for most people. And so if you don't drive a car, you're not required to have a driver's license. You're not required to have an ID. And there are tens of thousands, as many as 200,000 people, maybe more, in the state of Wisconsin who don't have a valid state-issued ID. And so it's simply not correct to say that this is something that is either required by the law. If you don't have a car, it's not required. And it's also not correct, as we saw in these court cases, to say that the people are just being lazy if they don't go get an ID. We had one caller already that said her father didn't have a birth certificate. And my father as well was born on a farm. He didn't have a birth certificate. And as I said, it was recorded in the family Bible. And so there are lots of people who it's very difficult for them to get a photo ID. For someone who has one, it might seem, it's easy, just go down there. But you have a birth certificate. A lot of people don't.
Voting in Wisconsin is what we're talking about this hour with Professor David Cannon, Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. Our phone number, one line is open, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter @KDunnShow. You may want to use, if you have access to the email, to use that, because our phone lines have been crowded. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go back to phone calls for Professor David Cannon. Kurt in Chippewa Falls is next. Hi, Kurt.
Thank you. I'm wondering why do we persist in arguing the supposed merits or demerits of this law when it is so transparently a voter suppression attempt. Several Republican dominated states have passed similar or identical laws. They've gone through the courts all in the same year under the same processes. It is so obviously a political thing, not having nothing to do with the excuses that are given to support it. Yesterday here at the West Side, when Kathy Brunier was on our West Side Wisconsin Public Radio call-in, several callers, myself included, called in and challenged her on the logic of this law, and she got angry and said it wasn't dignified enough to answer those questions or those callers. This is purely political, and the rest of us keep arguing as though there were some substance to this thing when there isn't.
Professor Cannon.
Well, yeah, and certainly there are many people who share that view. But interestingly, if you look at the public opinion polls on this, a greater proportion of people nationally actually support the view of our previous caller, Wade, who said, well, what's the big deal on voter ID laws? In fact, almost every public opinion poll you look at, a majority of people do support voter ID laws. And so this isn't just some right-wing agenda that's not supported by anyone. Actually, again, a majority of people think this is a good idea. Now, Minnesota recently voted down a voter ID amendment, statewide amendment, in the state of Minnesota. So that's the first time ever we've had a statewide vote to vote it down. But in general, I agree with this argument. This is largely a partisan effort to try to limit who can vote. And again, just going back to what Dale Schultz, the Republican senator from Richland Center, who said in this recent radio interview that he basically said that this is simply a partisan kind of issue, and he in this interview said, I'm not going to defend the Republicans anymore. I'm just not going to, and I'm embarrassed by this, is what he said. And that, so here's a Republican senator saying basically this is just partisan politics and there's no merit to the issue at all.
I wonder if you separately polled African Americans and then did a separate poll of women in this country, if you would have different statistics.
As possible. I actually haven't seen public opinion polls on voter ID laws broken down by race and gender, but that would be something interesting to look at.
Yeah. Thanks, Kurt, for the call. John in Elkhorn, hi.
Hi. Boy, Kurt stole my thunder because I would personally echo a lot of just what he said. And, boy, this is such a topic that, in my mind, really makes me angry. There's issues that can make me angry, but the very idea of suppressing our vote just really rankles me. And I find it to be purely political. I don't care what the polls say. I mean, I guess it's just good salesmanship on the Republican Party to get people to believe that they're doing the mom and the apple pie thing. But the reality is that I challenge people when they bring this up. And I said, my Republican friends, they really go off and they look themselves in the mirror and they laugh because they know what they're doing. And this is suppressing the vote. But here I am thinking into the next election in November, and I'm going, there's such a disenfranchisement between the people and Scott Walker that I think that there's somewhere in the mid-40s or low-40s of people that will not vote for him. And so what are we looking for him to win re-election? Somewhere in the 4 to 6%? Boy, and if he could just suppress in this state maybe 3%, maybe 4% of the people who most likely would go out and vote against him, there you go, re-election. And I know that I'm kind of throwing this out there, but I'd like to see what your gut thinks of that.
All right.
Right. Well, I would just go back again to what Dale Schultz said. And this interview, if people didn't hear about this before, they could go out to the Cap Times site and check this out. But another thing he said in the interview was, quote, it's just sad when a political party has lost its faith in its ideas and is pouring all of its energy into election mechanics. We should be pitching ideas as political parties, the ideas for improving things in the future, rather than mucking around in the mechanics and making it more confrontational at the voting sites and trying to suppress the vote. And so, Dale Schultz himself is saying he's sort of calling out his own party and saying that they're trying to suppress the vote. And another thing that Schultz talked about in the interview that I think maybe a lot of listeners might not be aware of is the Republican Party used to be the party of voting rights. If you go back to the 1950s and the Eisenhower era, it was the Republican Party that was supporter of civil rights and voting rights. A higher proportion of Republicans voted for the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act in 1964 and 65 than Democrats did. And on the Voting Rights Act, the most important piece of voting rights legislation in the history of this country, 82% of Republicans voted for that compared to 78% of Democrats in the House. 94% of Republican senators voted for it in 1965 versus 75% of Democrats. So Republicans used to be the strongest party in this country on voting rights. And so something changed over the last couple of decades, and now I think they have been more engaged in this idea of limiting the vote, and it really is an unfortunate turn of events.
Have you, Professor Cannon, you do this as a livelihood, you study all of these issues, has there been anybody who has given you pause in explaining why we need voter ID or why we need not as much accessibility to voting before a major election, who's made you think, oh, well, you might have a point?
No, I really haven't. I mean, there simply isn't any good argument for voter ID laws, because voter impersonation fraud is just not a problem. And when you look at the hundreds of thousands of people who would be affected by voter ID laws nationally, compared to no documented cases that we've had in the state of Wisconsin on voter impersonation fraud, it's an easy cost-benefit kind of analysis there, that if we are trying to make it so people can vote, that the voter ID law is definitely not something that would help in that regard, and it clearly would have an impact of at least making it somewhat more difficult for some people to vote without any net gain in terms of the integrity of the system.
Margie in Milwaukee, hello. Margie, are you there? All right, Margie's gone. Let's go to Dave in Juneau. Hi, Dave.
Yes. Shay, I'm calling to piggyback on some of the points that have been already made, but as the professor has so eloquently demonstrated, these laws are solutions in search of problems that do not exist. And, there is literally no such thing as voter impersonation fraud, and there are no clerks complaining about the hours of their polling places. And so when you see a party spending so much time on something that is literally not solving any problem, you got to wonder, well, why are they really doing that? And I think the point has been amply demonstrated that it's simply a voter suppression tool that happens to benefit one side of the aisle. And I think that if the Republican Party were to really take the long view, they'd try to win on the merits instead of trying to rig the election.
Right. Yeah. So Dave clearly sort of agrees with the points that I've been laying out here. But one thing I want to go back to from an earlier caller who cited that Milwaukee Police Department study on voter fraud.
Right.
There definitely have been cases of voter fraud around the country, from old-fashioned ballot box stuffing to people felons voting who shouldn't have been able to vote and weren't aware of the fact they shouldn't have been able to vote, and some aliens, illegal aliens, non-citizens voting. There are dozens and dozens of cases, documented cases of those kinds of fraud, of felons voting, non-citizens voting, of ballot box stuffing. So there have been cases of fraud. And so I want to make sure that the listeners know that what I'm arguing is that voter ID does not help prevent those kinds of fraud. The only thing voter ID prevents is the voter impersonation fraud, and that's what we have no evidence of that kind of fraud.
Thanks, Dave, very much for the call. I think Margie is with us now. Hi, Margie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to ask specifically about the lady in northern Wisconsin that lived with her sister and didn't get any bills in the mail. Would a bank statement that has her name and address count?
Yeah, a bank statement would definitely work. But sometimes, if you don't have a joint account, you wouldn't have your name on the bank statement either. Now, most married couples, I think, do have joint bank accounts, but you wouldn't necessarily have to. And so maybe her name wasn't on a bank statement either. But yes, a bank statement would work. A utility bank statement, any kind of official document like that has your name and address would help you get registered.
I guess I'm not. We have about a minute left. I'm not fully understanding why it is a majority of Americans would be in favor of voter ID.
Well, it's because it's the kind of common sense argument that Scott Walker and the Republicans make, that hey, you have to have an ID to do just about anything in modern life. You want to rent a movie, you want to rent a car, you want to get on an airplane, you want to drive a car, you've got to have an ID. And so their argument is it's just not that much of a burden on people that we're expected to have IDs, and so why shouldn't we have an ID to vote? And so I think a majority of Americans accept this idea that you should have to be able to show an ID to prove who you are when you vote, and it does make some intuitive sense that that would be an expectation. What they don't realize, though, is it actually is a burden on a fair number of people who don't have
right.
an ID.
Thank you, Professor Cannon, for being with us.
Good to be with you. Thank you.
Professor David Cannon, professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He is the co-author, he's the author of Race, Redistricting, and Representation, and the co-author of Election Laws, Mobilization, and Turnout, the Unanticipated Consequences of Election Reform. Thanks to America Suval for producing this hour, and thanks to Lisa Nalbandian for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. We have news coming up momentarily in another hour, so stay with us.